Life Audio. You're listening to Therapy and Theology, and I'm your host, Carly Merclear. This podcast is a space where we explore popular topics and questions related to the convergence of faith, feelings, spiritual formation, and more. My prayer is that through these conversations, we will grow in our awareness of who we are as beloved children of God, learn to acknowledge our needs and emotions with curiosity and compassion, and rediscover the purpose and power of our unique stories through the lens of the gospel. As a licensed therapist and ministry leader, I want to give voice to the many questions we face while cultivating a clearer view of how our faith informs our healing journey. I don't have all the answers, but I am committed to going deeper and walking together. So whether you've been to therapy or know exactly what you believe when it comes to theology, I want to invite you to join this journey as we fearlessly name the complexities of our present reality and press into the hope of the gospel story. So are you ready? Let's jump into today's question and begin this journey together.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Well, we're back, and last week we dove into the topic of trauma-informed faith and faith after abuse and just kind of explored the different types of experiences that we can have that impact our view of faith in God. So if you haven't listened to part one, I encourage you to go back and check that out. But we are back to talk a little bit more today about the focus on how the church and the church members and those that identify as believers can become more aware of a trauma-informed perspective when engaging in social interactions with their neighbors, coworkers, friends, and family. So thank you so much for being with me again, Charles. And let's dive right into some of the barriers that you see in the church for those who desire to share God's love and compassion with others. What do you see coming up as some of the things that are maybe not so helpful to those that are seeking or, I would say, very wounded?
So two big ones that come to mind just in terms of like postures in relationships. One, it's obvious, is just a posture of judgment where if I hear something or experience something from my neighbor or my friend and I think or even verbally express, that's not right, that's wrong, that's not okay. And our friend may even experience that as something's wrong with me and I'm not right or okay. That is not super safe. To our friend is not going to want to open up to us if they feel like we are under the lens of judgment, if they're under the lens of our judgment, if we're elevating ourselves as the arbiter of what's right or wrong in their lives. And honestly, that's not great adulting. That's not great differentiation. There's no... Yeah. You don't have room to be yourself because I need you to be whatever I want to be for myself. And I'm going to, you know, kind of project that onto you.
Can I ask a question about that?
Yeah.
What would you say to because I've had this happen multiple times, right? And I work with a lot of people in ministry. And the question or the statement I tend to hear as kind of a devil's advocate is, well, I like truth is love. You know, like I need to tell them what's true because the Bible says this. And that language of, I think you mentioned it already, like superiority tends to be really tricky. I don't know if there's anything that
can be said, or maybe even just a curiosity within that, that you have for people that have that view?
Yeah. You know, I don't know if this would be particularly persuasive to somebody who would, truth is love. But I mean, in like to channel some of the perspective of family systems theory, I think that's overfunctioning. To think without invitation, without someone's request that you give your perspective on their life, that they need to hear what the truth is, and that that is somehow loving when it may not be welcome. It may not even be asked for. It may be unsolicited. I think that is to overfunction. That's to, it is to take more responsibility than is yours to take. And that doesn't seem particularly loving or truthful to me. Because I think the truth is love, but I also think that love is the truth.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's such a helpful way of looking at it for those that maybe are countering this and recognizing, oh, okay, that's what's happening in those dynamics, right? I think it's really helpful to hold space for, I am not the Holy Spirit in someone's life. And that's so freeing. It can take such a load off, right? Like, it's not my job to be the Holy Spirit and convict someone. And if someone comes to me, I'm there for them if they want to have that conversation and they want my insight. But outside of that, it's really good. So you mentioned judgment as being one of like a big barrier. What other ones do you feel?
The other one I think is that comes to mind is defensiveness, you know, feeling defensive. And I think this is judgment may also be a very natural or, a kind of gut response to things we'll hear or experience from our friends or our neighbors. It's not to judge either of these responses per se, but, you know, I can empathize with the defensive posture. You know, if I hear a story that, you know, this church or Christian leader was really crummy to me and it hurt me so bad, and I never want to step foot inside of a church or have anything to do with religion. And I see this in memes on Facebook all the time. I see it in tweets from pastors. The response, not every church is like that. Don't write off the whole thing because of that one church or experience. That's not the God that I serve, or, you know, and all of it comes from a well-meaning place, and may very well be true. Like, Christianity means a lot to me. I'm a Jesus person. I'm a church person. I'm a God person. And it's an honest kind of reaction to be like, but that's not super safe for our friends, because it minimizes the pain that they've experienced. They don't, the weight of their pain and harm has collapsed their ability to distinguish between this expression of church and another. And you saying that not every church is like that is not going to convince them otherwise. What will convince them is if you're the kind of loving, empathic person that would make them wonder, that person, she or they, are not like other religious folks that I've been around. And I wonder if there are differences, ways. If you can be a Christian and not be a jerk, I
want. What a concept.
I love that. Helpful. Yeah. Folks need, and I get where they come. I get those reactions, their normal reactions.
And I see this happening so frequently. I do a lot of attachment-based family work, and the parent is very quickly wanting to always be like, that's not what I meant. I didn't, you're like, you were loved as a child. The kid's like, I didn't feel loved as a child. The first thing they want to say is just like, no, you were loved. I did love you. And yet a belief can't be changed with another belief. It has to be changed with an experience. And so when we're able to, like, I love that idea of holding that space for someone. This can be, I have done this work with so many clients at this point where I don't tell them what I think. I don't tell them my theology. I don't even quote scripture. And their ability to get from point A, I hate God, never want to talk about him, to point B, I think there might be a loving God who cares about me, all on their own with the work of the Spirit, is just powerful, you know. And of course, they're doing their own work and seeking, you know, things outside of our time. But there's such goodness in that. If we can breath at our own internal response to things.
Yes.
Which is our own work. And I think you talk about this in the book as well, like that differentiation of self and being able to not take on the responsibility, as you said earlier, not over-functioning for the sake of, you know, numbers or for the sake of, you know, this, I have to have people believe everything I say in order for me to feel validated, et cetera.
Yes. I loved what you said about, and I need to write it down after this so that I don't forget it. And you may need to say it again for me, but something to the effect of beliefs don't change beliefs, experiences do. And yes, that's it. That is the simplest way of saying what I spent lots of pages trying to say.
Yes.
Essentially that, especially in a cultural moment where there is this great crisis of credibility in Christianity and in the church and in the just the mainstream perception, words are cheap and us defending things is not going to be super effective. But what will be is embodying the very thing that we would want to defend. If we will embody kindness and graciousness and empathy and goodness and holding space and safety, if we'll embody those things, that experience will do so much of the work of creating space for our friends to feel like, okay, maybe there's different possibilities for me to explore here.
So good. Yeah. I know that you've maybe already spoken to this a little bit, but you outlined several ways for believers to begin creating communities for healing. I don't know if you could share a little bit more about that and what that has looked like for you, maybe some tangible things for others to begin this work of safe healing places.
So I think, you know, hearkening back to the first part of our conversation about Jesus being an empathetic witness to our pain, I think that's my work. That's our work in the church, is joining Jesus as empathetic witnesses to the pain of our neighbors and our fellow disciples.
Absolutely.
That's the work that we're doing in cultivating those spaces, is to create spaces, create communities of belonging where folks can come with their pain and their hurt and like be seen in that and be held non-defensively, non-judgmentally. That safety, safety is a hard word because I really like that word. It's hard to be 100% safe. I mean, just because we're humans, right? You know, there's always risk to navigate in relationships.
Yeah.
But I do think there's something in safety that I think is a big practice, and it's effectively this non-judgmental, accepting, non-defensive kind of posture that when people feel comfortable to like share their pain, that that we hear that we mourn that with them, that we stand with them against that bad thing that happened to them before anything else. And even previous to realizing it may take a really long time before somebody trusts us enough to share their stories with us, understandably, because of the terrible experiences that they've had. Can I trust religious people again or Christian leaders again? And so one aspect of that just has to be patience and holding, releasing outcomes for people that are in spaces we're in. I was on a church website today reading through some of their like, if you're new here kind of material, just kind of randomly. And I loved it because they said, you know, you may just want to come and sit and just experience it. And you may just need a place to kind of hang back and watch. And that's okay, because we know lots of people have been hurt by churches and it takes a little while to heal. And I thought, yes, that is so trauma informed and trauma sensitive, that they don't feel like they have to trust and be ready all of a sudden to be high commitment and all in for Jesus, or else they're not good enough to be in that space. There's a place for that. But there has to be space too for folks just to sit and watch and stress out. Am I going to be safe here? Will it be okay for me to, can I feel comfortable here enough to get to know some people and maybe share my stories? And I think that's another element of these spaces for healing and recovery, is what that safety creates an environment where those stories can be told, where they can be witnessed, where we can say, I'm so sorry that happened, and my heart breaks with you for that. That should never have happened. And just in that witnessing, healing occurs. There's unwinding that happens. My story is valid, and my experiences aren't minimized. That on the other side of that, as folks start to heal up, they begin to reimagine, okay, how do I reconnect? And what do I think about God on the other side of this? And what does this mean for me as a person in my life and my family and my work? I don't know. I'm kind of rambling a little bit, but I think those are some of the pieces of these healing and resilient kind of environments.
Absolutely. So good. One of the last things I'll ask maybe for you to share a little bit about that. I loved this idea that you shared in the book about hospitality and being a guest. And you talked about this idea of flipped hospitality and the role of becoming a guest instead of the host. And I was just like, yes, I just started underlining, because I feel so often that the church always is in this like invitation mode, and in this, as believers, I think it can be, I am the light of the world and I need to somehow host all the people, you know? And what does it look like practically to become a guest, and how that can help us form these safe places for people? I think that's just so important.
Yes, I think this taps into something that, one thing I want to name that is not often named when we talk about, I don't think it is, at least within my earshot, when we talk about hospitality and hosting. And that is the power dynamic that is at work.
Absolutely.
At least initially, the host is on the top side of the power dynamic.
Absolutely.
Because the host gets to kind of control the environment and the parameters. This space of hosting is ultimately an expression of the host's values and beliefs, which is fine. But I just want to notice that there is a power difference between the host and the guest. And in some cases, in the worst cases, that power dynamic, that power difference creates the conditions where harm can occur, right? Because there's power on this side and there's less power over here. And if that power is misused, folks can be harmed. Well, we're in a moment where lots of folks have been harmed. And I don't have anything against hosting, but the truth is there are a lot of people who feel like they have been there and done that. They have been hosted and it did not go well, and they are not interested to be hosted by the church anymore. Thank you very much. I don't care how many times you invite me to your stinking program or whatever. I'm not coming. I don't want to be hosted. So when that's the reality, we have to love our neighbors. We have to be guests. And I love this about Jesus. Jesus sits at so many tables that are not his own.
So well.
And in the movements of within Christianity, the most wonderful missionary movements are the ones who took a guest kind of posture, and they went with humility and vulnerability. They consciously took the downside of that power differential and made themselves vulnerable to the hospitality of their host, to say, hey, we're here to learn from you. We can only be around in your good graces. And, you know, it can be a terrifying proposition to entrust ourselves to the good graces of someone else. What do folks that are new to church feel like? I mean, that's one great benefit of being a guest, is that it gives us a sense of empathy and insight into the experiences of what it's like for other folks to become guests in our place. Because it is hard. It's awkward. My junior high insecurities, you know. Well, people like me. Well, is it awkward for me not to talk for this amount of time? Or will I be accepted or whatever? And it just feels like the way of Jesus, that Christian folks would be the first ones to take the burden of being guests. And it, I think it's necessary when so many folks, rightfully so, are never going to darken the doors of church building.
Yeah.
They're never going to be hosted. And so our path forward is to be their guests. And they're, and that's with no agenda or outcomes to manage. It's simply in obedience to Jesus's invitation to love our neighbors. That's the heart of our faith. And I think that's how we do it, that we love our neighbors by, at least in part, becoming their guests.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's not complicated. For me, it was showing up one Sunday night at the bar in our neighborhood. I found a board gaming group on meetup.com, and I just went with a couple other people, and, you know, we were the nervous, wide-eyed, deer in the headlight folks. And it was a spiritual experience, even in the person who was the host, to see the smile on their face and to say, "Hey, are you guys here for games?" "Yes." Would y'all want to sit down with me? And do you have any experience with games?" "No, not much." "Well, could I teach you one of my favorite games?" "That would be wonderful." That was a spiritual experience for me. I was like, "You just received the welcome of God from a stranger in a bar on a Sunday night over a board game, you know?" So for all of the terror of it, there are just these very spiritual experiences.
Oh, I love that. That's beautiful. Yes. That's such an invitation to those that want to embody this in their communities. What a great, I'm thinking, okay, I want to do like a trivia. There's a trivia in our local area in the coffee shop. I'm like, I want to do that. I want to jump in there and feel that experience. That's awesome.
Yeah.
What is, maybe as we close today's episode, what is just one maybe piece of encouragement that you would give to those, maybe on both sides of this conversation, those that maybe have experienced religious trauma and forms that have made it really difficult to take a step towards a new imagination of God. And then on the other side, to those that are in church communities, really wanting to embody Jesus in their communities.
Okay, let me start with the last one. And maybe it applies to the first, but maybe it will inspire something for folks who have experienced harm. The thing that comes to mind is this great turn of phrase from Parker Palmer, who is a Quaker educator and theologian of sorts. And one of his practices is, when the going gets rough, turn to wonder. And I love that. When we feel judgmental or defensive, may that be a cue, an invitation to say, I wonder how they got there. I wonder what experiences informed that. You know, I also wonder about myself. Why am I responding in this way? This, when the going gets rough, turn to wonder, to have this posture of curiosity. And that, I think that is that's the foundation of empathy, is just this sense of wonder in our relationships. And, you know, I think maybe there's a way for that to apply. I'm sensitive to the ways that, like, for our friends who carry trauma, one of the most devastating effects of trauma is the way that it immobilizes or devastates or destroys the ability to wonder.
That's right.
And to imagine.
That's right.
And maybe even that is even a point of kindness or grace.
Yeah.
For our friends who do carry trauma and harm, to be kind to yourself.
Yeah.
Don't feel like you can wonder, when you feel like all you can feel is anger or deep sadness, you know, that's okay. Be kind to yourself. It's understandable in light of some of the things that you've experienced. And when the time comes, turn to wonder. When you can, turn to wonder. Because there are beautiful possibilities in wonder. There are new connections to God and to others through that pathway of wonder.
So good. Well, thank you so much, Charles, for everything. Where can people connect with you? Where can people get your book? Maybe we'll just end on that note, because I know that I'd love to share and allow people to connect with you further if they want to.
Right on. A great bridge to all the things for me is just my personal website, charleskiser.com, K-I-S-E-R, charleskiser.com. And you can get the book. It's called, you know, if you put, you know, you can find it through the website. You can also plug in trauma-informed evangelism at Amazon or Barnes & Noble or wherever you buy your books, and it should pop up.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being on this episode, and thank you for all the work you're doing in the ministry that you're a part of.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Therapy and Theology. If you have a question or topic you would like discussed on a future episode, please feel free to email me or drop it in the comments. Also, don't forget to subscribe to have each week's episode instantly downloaded to your podcasts, and see the show notes for resources mentioned in this episode. To access more content and join my monthly email list for the latest updates and info, visit my website at carlymarkluyer.com.
Finding uplifting news in today's headlines is often like searching for a needle in a haystack. At the Story Behind podcast, we believe in the power of finding heartwarming tales and are happy to share empowering stories with you every week. Get inspired by the note a waitress received from a patron dining alone, and even hear about how one VIP passenger made a hardworking pilot get emotional before his flight. To start listening to the Story Behind podcast, visit lifeaudio.com